and Barons would walk in, and he wouldn't even have to say anything. We could just sit in companionable or, oh, who cared, grumpy silence. Whatever bizarre scheme he came up with, I'd go along with it. We'd squabble over what car to take and who got to drive. We'd kill monsters and hunt artifacts and try to figure out how to capture the book. It would be perfect. He was alive! As I moved to stand again, something slipped from my lap and I dropped back down to the floor to retrieve it. It was the picture of Alina that I'd left in my parents' mailbox the night Villain had taken me to Ashford to show me that he'd restored my hometown and was keeping my family safe. The night Darok had tracked me by the brand on my skull and later abducted my mom and dad. This was the calling card Darok had tacked to the front door of BB&B, demanding I come to him through the Silvers if I valued their lives. That Barons had left it for me now told me one thing. He had rescued my mom and dad before I'd IYD'd him into the Silvers. But he hadn't given me the picture as a present or to make me feel better. He'd left it for the same reason Darok had, to make the same point. I have your parents, don't fuck with me. Okay, so he was a little pissed off at me. I could deal with that. If he'd killed me, I'd be a little pissed off too, no matter how irrational it was. But he would get over it. I couldn't have asked for more. Well, I could have, like Alina back and all the Fae dead, but this was good. This was a world I wanted to live in. My parents were safe. I clutched the letter and photo. I hugged them to my chest. I hated that he'd stormed off and left me lying on the floor, but I had proof of his existence, and I knew he'd be back. I was the oop detector, and he was the oop director. We were a team. He was alive. I wanted to stay awake all night, basking in the glow that Jericho Barons wasn't dead, but my body had other ideas. The moment I stepped into my bedroom, I nearly collapsed. If there's one thing I've learned since Alina's death, it's that grief is more physically draining than running a marathon every day. It wipes you out and leaves you bruised, body and soul. I managed to wash my face and brush my teeth, smiling like an idiot at myself in the mirror, but flossing and moisturizing was beyond me. Too much effort. I wanted to puddle in a brainless heap, curl up in the comforting arms of the knowledge that I hadn't killed him. I wasn't guilty. He wasn't dead. I was sorry he hadn't waited around. I wished I knew where he was. I wished I had a cell phone. I would have told him all the things I'd never said. I would have confessed my feelings. I wouldn't have been afraid to be tender. Losing him had clarified my emotions, and I wanted to shout them from the rooftop. But not only didn't I have any idea where he went at night, I could barely move. Pain had been the glue keeping my will strong and my bones together. Without it, I was limp. Oh, tomorrow was another day, and he was going to be alive in it. I stripped and crawled into bed. I passed out while I was still pulling the covers up and slept like a woman who'd hiked through hell without food or rest for months. My dreams were so vivid. I felt like I was living them. I dreamed I was watching Darok die again, enraged that his death was being stolen from me so anticlimactically, my revenge snatched away in the pinch of a hunter's talons. I dreamed I was back in the Silvers, searching for Christian but never finding him. I dreamed I was at the Abbey, on the floor of the cell, and Rowena came in and slit my throat. I felt the lifeblood gurgle out of me, turning the dirt floor to mud. I dreamed I was in the cold place, chasing the beautiful woman that I couldn't catch up with. And then I dreamed I'd actually done it, destroyed the world and replaced it with one I wanted. Afterward, I flew over my new world astride the mighty ancient Kvruk. His great black wings whipped my hair into a tangle. And I laughed like a demon while the dissonant, haunting notes of Pink Martini's remix of Que Sera Sera tinkled like a harpsichord from hell. I slept for 16 hours. I needed every minute of it. The past 3 days were a surreal nightmare and had exhausted me. The first thing I did when I woke up was pull Baron's note from under my pillow and read it again to reassure myself he was alive. Then I dashed down the stairs so fast I slid down the last 5 steps on my pajama-clad ass, desperate for confirmation that the bookstore was indeed still trash. It was. I did a celebratory dance in the debris. Because it was afternoon and Barons rarely came around until early evening, I went back upstairs and took a long, hot shower. I conditioned, exfoliated, and shaved. I leaned back against the wall, stretched out my legs, and watched water splash over the spear strapped to my thigh, letting my mind go blank while I relaxed. Unfortunately, my mind wouldn't stay blank and my body wouldn't relax. The muscles in my legs kept tensing, my neck and shoulders were tight, and my fingers tapped a fast staccato on the shower floor. Something was bothering me. A lot. Beneath my happy surface, a dark storm was brewing. How could anything be bothering me? My world was blue skies all the way, despite Dublin's constant rain. How could I not be blissfully happy at this moment? It was a good day. Barons was alive. Darok was dead. I was no longer stuck in the Silvers, fighting myriad monsters and dodging illusions. I frowned, realizing that was exactly the problem. At this moment, there was nothing wrong, besides the usual fate of the world stuff I'd become mostly inured to. I couldn't deal with that. I'd been compressed, gripped in a painful vice. I'd gotten used to it. It was things being wrong that had given me shape and purpose and kept me going. But in the past 24 hours, I'd gone from being 100% consumed by grief and rage to having every single reason for feeling those emotions stripped away. Barons was alive. Grief! Poof! The man I'd believed had murdered my sister. The one I'd been so committed to killing was dead. The infamous Lord Master was gone. That chapter of my life was over. He would never again lead the Unseelie, wreak havoc in my world, or hunt and hurt me. I didn't have to constantly watch over my shoulder for him anymore. The bastard who'd turned me prior was beyond my vengeful grasp. He'd gotten his just deserts. Well, he was dead anyway. His just deserts would have been a whole lot worse if I'd been in charge of doling them out. Regardless, he'd been my raison d'être for the longest time, and he was gone. What did that leave me? Revenge. Poof! I'd always envisioned a final showdown between the two of us, and I would kill him. Who was my villain now? Who would I hate and blame for Alina's death? It wasn't Darok. He'd had a genuine weakness for her. He hadn't killed her. And if he'd been somehow responsible for her death, he hadn't known it. 6 months in Dublin, and I was no closer to uncovering my sister's murderer. With Barons alive and Darok dead, there went my all-consuming focus on revenge. My parents were safe and in Barons' care. There was no one I needed to save. I had no urgent purpose, no express deadline. I felt lost. Directionless. Sure, I had most of the same primary goals I'd had before I'd gone into the Silvers, and everything had gone so terribly wrong. But grief had poured me into a tight box, and those walls had shaped me. Now that the box was gone, I could feel myself collapsing into a shapeless blob. What was next? Where to from here? I needed time to absorb the sudden changes in my reality and recalibrate my emotions. Confusing me even more, beneath the joy I felt that Barons was alive, I was, well, angry. Furious, actually. There was something seething inside me, and I didn't even know what. But deep down, underneath it all, I was working up a major temper and feeling stupid. Like I'd leapt to conclusions that didn't hold water. I got out of the shower, thoroughly disgruntled, and picked through my clothes, dissatisfied with them all. Yesterday I would have known exactly what to wear. Today I had no idea. Pink or black? Maybe it was time for a new favorite color, or maybe no favorite color at all. Rain pattered against the window while I dithered. Dublin was once again gray. I pulled on a pair of gray capri sweats with Juicy stamped across my ass, a zip-up sweatshirt and flip-flops. If Baron still wasn't around, I would start cleaning up downstairs a little. After all, I'd done what he'd asked. My parents were free. I was alive. Darok was dead. And I had the stones tucked securely away in the heavily ruined bedroom of a penthouse. According to my understanding of the law, that made it my bookstore now. That meant it was also my Lamborghini, my Viper, too.
It wasn't my fucking idea, either.
I heard Baron's growl as I descended the rear stairs. The door to his study was open a few inches, and I could hear him moving around in there, picking things up and putting them back down. I stopped on the last step and smiled, reveling in the simple pleasure of hearing his voice again. Until he'd been gone, I hadn't understood how empty the world was without him. My smile faded. I shifted from foot to foot on the stairs. My mood might be sunshine glinting off water, but there was a dark undertow beneath the placid surface. I'd gone further off the deep end than I liked to think about, with the whole decimate-the-universe kick I'd been on. I'd been 100% committed to wresting whatever dark knowledge I'd needed from the book, no matter the cost to myself or anyone else. I'd been willing to do anything it could teach me in order to replace this world with a new one. All because I'd believed Jericho Barons was dead. I hadn't even had a concrete plan except to get the book and wing it, believing I could master whatever spells of making and unmaking it had to offer. Looking back on my behavior, I was stymied by it. Rabid ambition, insane focus. Alina's death hadn't done that to me. I pushed my hands into my hair and tugged as if the gentle pain might clarify my thoughts, shed light on my recent temporary insanity. It must have been the betrayal aspect of it all that had made me so crazy. If only it hadn't been me who'd stabbed him, I never would have cracked like I had. Sure, my grief at losing Barons had been intense, but it was the guilt that had crushed me. I'd turned on my protector, and my protector had turned out to be Barons. Shame, not grief, had fueled my need for revenge. That was it. Guilt had turned me into a woman obsessed, willing to consider erasing one world to create a new one. If I'd been the one who'd stabbed Alina, if I'd participated in killing her, I would have felt exactly the same way and considered doing the same thing. It wouldn't have even been love motivating me as much as a desperate need to erase my own complicity. Now that grief wasn't a fist around my heart, I knew I would never have gone through with it. Recreate the world just for Jericho Barons? The thought was ridiculous. I'd lost Alina and hadn't turned into a world-destroying banshee, and I'd loved her all my life. I'd known Barons only a few months. If I was going to recreate the world for anyone, it would have been my sister. Okay, that was resolved. I hadn't betrayed Alina by not going all Mad Max over her. So why did I still feel something dark, twisting and turning inside me, trying to get to the surface? What was eating at me?
Bloody hell, Riordan, and we've been over this 1,000 times.
Barons exploded.
The whole bloody way back we talked about it. We had a plan. You deviated. You were supposed to get her to safety. She was never supposed to know it was me. It's your fault she knows we can't die.
I froze. Riordan was alive, too. I watched him get ripped to shreds and be flung down 100-foot ravine. I frowned. He'd said, can't die. What did that mean? As in never? No matter what? He was quiet for a moment, and I realized he was on the phone.
You knew I'd fight. You knew I'd win. I always win. That's why you were supposed to separate us and shoot me so she wouldn't know I was dead. Bring more ammo next time. Try a rocket launcher. Think maybe you could manage to hit me with that?
He said sarcastically. A rocket launcher? Barons would survive that?
You're the one that fucked up. She watched us die.
Indeed I did. So why weren't they dead? There was another pause. I held my breath, listening.
I don't give a shit what they think. And don't give me this vote crap. Nobody voted. Lore doesn't even know what century it is. And Castillo hasn't said a word in 1,000 years. You're not killing her, and neither are they. If anyone is going to kill her, it's me. And that's not happening right now. I need the book.
I stiffened. He'd said, right now, strongly implying that there might be another time it was happening, and the only reason he wasn't killing me was because he needed the book. This was the jackass I'd been grieving, whose return I'd been celebrating. I didn't ponder the 1,000 years comment. I'd work on that later.
If you think I've hunted it this long to kill the best chance I've got, you don't know shit about me.
There it was again, the phrase Fiona had used the night he'd stabbed her to shut her up. I was his best chance. At what?
Bring it on. You, Lore, Castillo, Fade, whoever wants to get in my way. But if I were you, I'd back the fuck off. Don't give me a reason to make you live to regret it. Is that what you want? A pointless, eternal war? You want us at each other's throats?
Silence.
I never forget my loyalties. You've forgotten your faith. Keep her parents alive. Follow my orders. It'll be over soon.
I fisted my hands. What exactly was going to be over?
That's where you're wrong. One world isn't just as good as any other. Some worlds are better. We've known she's a wild card since the beginning. After what I learned about her the other night, I have to let this hand play out. Have you located Telly yet? I need to question the woman, assuming she's still alive. No. Get more people on it.
What did he mean by after what he'd learned about me? That I'd teamed up with Darok? That according to him, I'd been willing to betray him? Or was there something else? Who was Telly, and what did he need to question her about?
Darok is dead. She'll tell Valaine she made it up. No one will believe the kid.
Another long pause.
Of course she'll do what I say. I'll take Valaine out myself if I have to.
He paused.
The fuck you could.
The silence stretched so long that I realized he must have terminated the call. Hand on the doorframe, I stood, eyeing the stairs.
Get your ass in here, Miss Lane. Now.
I heard... I began.
I let you hear.
He cut me off. I shut my mouth, closed the door, and leaned back against it. The corners of his lips turned up as if at some private amusement, and for a moment I thought we were having one of those silent conversations.
You think it's safe to close yourself in with the beast?
If you think I'm afraid of you, you're wrong.
You should be afraid.
Maybe you should be afraid of me. Go ahead, piss me off, Barons. See what happens.
Little girl thinks she's all grown up now.
His mouth moved into a smile that I've grown familiar with over the past few months, shaped of competing tensions. Part mockery, part pissed off, and part turned on. Men are so complicated.
Now you know what they think of you. I'm all that stands between you and my men,
he said. That and a very deep glassy lake. I'd dive to the bottom if I had to. Even though he was alive again, even though I now understood I never would have destroyed this world to resurrect him, I was no longer the woman I'd been before I'd helped kill him and never would be again. The transformation I'd undergone had done permanent damage. The emotions I'd felt, believing he was dead, had cut deep, leaving my heart battle-scarred, my soul changed. The grief might be over, but the memory of those days, the choices I'd made, the things I'd almost done would be a part of me forever. I suspected some part of me was still slightly numb and might be for a long time. My gaze strayed to his neck. It was as if his throat had never been cut. There was no wound, no scar. He was completely healed. I'd seen him naked last night and knew there were no scars on his torso either. His body bore no evidence of the violent death he'd endured. I glanced back at his face. He was staring at my newly dyed hair. I pushed it back, tucked it behind my ears. From the hostility in his gaze, I knew if I opened my mouth again, he'd just cut me off, so I waited, enjoying the view. One of the things I realized when I'd been grieving him was how attractive I find him. Barron's is addictive. He grows on you until you can't begin to imagine anyone you'd like to look at more. He wears his dark hair slicked back from his face, sometimes cut, sometimes long, as if he can't be bothered to regularly get it trimmed. I now know why. At well over 6 feet of long, hard muscle, he moves with such animal grace. He's an animal. His forehead, nose, mouth, and jaw bear the stamp of a gene pool that died out long ago, blended with whatever it is that makes him the beast. Though symmetrical, with strong planes and angles, his face is too primitive to be handsome. Barron's might have evolved enough to walk upright, but he never relinquished the purity and unapologetic drives of a born predator. The aggressive ruthlessness and bloodlust of my demon guardian is his inherent nature. When I first arrived in Dublin, he terrified me. I inhaled deeply, inflating my lungs with a long, slow breath. Though 10 feet and a wide desk separate us, I can smell him. The scent of his skin is one I will never forget, no matter how long I live. I know the taste of him in my mouth. I know the smell we make together. Sex is a perfumery that creates its own fragrance, takes two people and makes them smell like a third. It's a scent neither person can make alone. I wonder if that third smell can become a drug of blended pheromones that can be generated only by the mixture of those two people's sweat, saliva, and semen. I'd like to shove him back on the desk, straddle him, dump a storm of emotion across his body with mine. I realize he's staring at me, hard, and that my thoughts might have been a bit transparent. Desire's a hard thing not to telegraph. It changes the way we breathe and subtly rearranges our limbs. If you're attuned to someone, it's impossible not to notice.
"Is there something you want from me, Miss Lane?"
he says very softly. Lust stirs in his ancient eyes. I remember the first time I glimpsed it there. I'd wanted to run, screaming. Savage Mac had wanted to play. The answer to his question was a resounding yes. I wanted to launch myself across his desk and expel something violent from my system. I wanted to beat him, punish him for the pain I'd suffered. I wanted to kiss him, slam myself down on him, reassure myself that he was alive in the most elemental way I could. "If anyone is going to kill her," he'd said moments ago, "it's me." God, how I'd grieved him! He speaks of killing me so casually, still not trusting me, never trusting me. Those dark currents gurgle, begin to gush. I am furious with him. He deserves a dose of grief himself. I wet my lips. As a matter of fact, there is. He inclines his head imperiously, waiting. "And only you can give it to me," I purr, arching my back. His gaze drops to my breasts.
"I'm listening."
It's long overdue. I haven't been able to think about anything else. It nearly drove me crazy today waiting for you to get here so I could ask for it. He stands up and rakes me with a scathing look.
"Sloppy seconds,"
his eyes say. "You had it first," I counter silently. "I think that means he got the leftovers." I push away from the door, circle the desk, trailing my fingertips lightly over his silver as I pass it. He watches my hand, and I know he's remembering how I once touched him. I stop a few inches from him. I'm humming with energy. He is too, I can feel it. I've become obsessed with getting it. And if you say no, I'll just have to take it. He inhales sharply.
You think you can?
Challenge stirs in his dark gaze. I have a sudden vision of the two of us having an all-out fight from end to end of the bookstore, culminating in fierce, no-holds-barred sex, and my mouth goes so dry I can't swallow for a moment. It might take me a while to get my hands on exactly what I want, but I have no doubt I could. His eyes say,
Bring it on, but you've got a lot to pay for.
He hates me for teaming up with Darok. He believes we were lovers, and he'd have sex with me in a heartbeat, against his better judgment, with no tenderness at all. But he'd do it. Oh, I don't get men. If I thought he'd betrayed me with, say, Fiona, a day after he'd helped kill me, I'd make him suffer for a good long time before I slept with him again. He believes that I had sex with my sister's lover the day after I stabbed him, that I forgot all about him and moved on. Men are wired different. I think for them it's about stamping out all trace, all memory of their competitor as quickly and completely as possible. And they feel that the only way they can do it is with their body, their sweat, their semen, as if they can remark us. I think sex is so intense for them, they can be so easily ruled by it, that they think we can too. I look up at him in those dark, bottomless eyes. Can you die? Ever? For a long moment he doesn't speak. Then he moves his head once in silent negation. As in, never? No matter what happens to you? I get that silent slice to the left and back to the middle again. The bastard! Now I understand the anger I've been feeling beneath the elation. Some part of my brain had already put this together. He'd let me grieve. He never told me he was a beast that couldn't be killed. He could have spared me all the pain I'd endured with one tiny little truth, one small confession, and I'd never have felt so violent and dark and broken. If he'd only just said, Ms. Lane, I can't be killed. So if you ever see me die, don't sweat it. I'll be back. I'd lost myself because of him, because of his idiotic need to keep everything about himself secret. There was no excuse for it. But even worse was this. I'd thought he'd given his life to save me, when all he'd really done was the equivalent of take a little nap. What did dying for someone mean when you knew you couldn't die? Not a damn thing. An inconvenience. IYD hadn't been a big deal after all. I'd wept. I'd mourned. I'd built a massive and utterly undeserved monument to Barons, the man who died so I could live in my head. I'd thought he'd made the ultimate sacrifice for me, and it had milked my emotions brutally. I'd let it consume me, take me over, turn me into someone I couldn't believe I'd been capable of becoming. And he'd never been willing to die so I could live. It had been business as usual. Barons keeping his oop detector alive and functioning, coolly impersonal, focused on his goals. So what if he was the one who would never let me die? It didn't cost him anything. He wanted the book. I was the way to get it. He had nothing to lose. I finally understood why he was always so fearless. I'd thought he'd cared about me so much he'd been willing to give up his life. I'd romanticized it and gotten swept away in a misguided fantasy. And if he'd stayed here last night, I'd have made a complete fool of myself. I'd have confessed feelings to him that I'd felt only because I'd thought he'd given his life for mine. Nothing had changed. There was no deeper level of understanding or emotion between us. He was Jericho Barron's oop director, pissed off at me because he thought I'd taken up with the enemy, irked that he'd had to endure an inconvenient death, but still not telling me a thing, using me to achieve his mysterious ends. He bristles with impatience. I feel the lust rolling off him, the violence beneath it.
You said you wanted something. What is it, Miss Lane?
I smile coolly. The deed to my bookstore, Barons. What else? The Danny Daily, 106 days AWC. Ding dong, the dick is dead. Read all about it. The Lord Master was murdered. Dude, like it was my 14th birthday or something already, instead of next week on the 20th, I got the uber coolest present. Derek, the fecker that brought the walls down between our worlds, is dead. These eyeballs saw it happen up close and personal last night. And get this, one of his own hunters killed him. Took off his head. Time to fight is now, while we got him on the run with nobody in charge. Jane and his men got a method. Join the madness at Dublin Castle. Annie, I got the nest of creepers in the back of your place last night. Anonymous 847, I cleared the warehouse, but, dude, you didn't need me. There was only two. Remember, you can build your own shade busters. I told you all about it a couple of rags ago. If you need supplies, check out Dex's on Main. I tacked the recipe to the wall by the bar. Keeping it short. Got a lot of fey ass to kick while I'm still 13. Which ain't much longer. Only 6 more days. Mega out. P.S. Happy V-Day, which I'm officially changing to Blaine's Day. Speaking of, anybody seen the Prince recently? If so, gotta tell him the Mega's looking for him. Got some stuff he needs to know about. Seventeen. Turn right here, I said. Baron shot me a look that pretty much said, fuck off and die. I returned it. I left the stones at Derek's penthouse. He yanked the wheel of the Viper to the right so hard, I nearly ended up in his lap. I knew what a mistake that would be. Since our sexually charged incident back at the bookstore, he hadn't spoken a single word. I'd never seen him so angry, and I've seen Barons angry a lot. When I'd delivered my frosty coup de grace, he regarded me with such contempt that if I'd been a lesser woman, I'd have withered up and died. I'm not lesser. He deserved it. Then he'd stalked away from me and stood staring into the silver for long moments. When he'd finally turned back, he raked a glance from my tousled blonde hair to my wedge flip-flops, then shot a look at the ceiling, telling me as clearly as if he'd spoken aloud to go change into something a grown woman would wear because we were leaving. When I'd come back down, he herded me into the garage without touching me. I'd felt tension ebbing and flowing like a violent surf beneath his skin, the same way the colors had crashed ceaselessly beneath the skin of the Unseelie Princes. He'd chosen the Viper from his collection and slid into the driver's seat. I knew he'd done it to provoke me, to remind me that nothing was mine, everything was his. "This is bullshit, and you know it," I snapped. I couldn't fight about what was really pissing me off, so I'd work with the material at hand. "Mom and Dad are out. I'm alive, and Derek is dead. You never specified who had to do what or how it had to happen. You only demanded an end result. Your terms were met." The Viper rumbled down the street, and I felt a flash of envy. I knew the thrill of the exhaust pipe's heat in the driver's compartment, the sleek pleasure of the gear stick in my hand, the rush of massive muscle idling hungrily, waiting for my next command. I sighed and looked out the window, watching the darkness slide by. I didn't have to give Barron's directions. He knew exactly where I'd stayed 2 nights ago. He turned right, then left, 12 blocks to the east and 7 to the south. The city was as silent as he was. Although I sensed a great number of Fae, they weren't out in the streets. I wondered if they were having a Fae summit somewhere, planning their next moves. I wondered if the Unseelie Nation had been unsettled by the loss of their liberator and leader, and if they were meeting to choose a new one. I wondered who would step up to take over. One of the Unseelie Princes? In a way, Derek hadn't been a bad choice to have leading the Dark Court. He'd wanted our world intact, because he'd wanted to rule it alongside the Fae Realm. He'd liked his human pleasures and had intended to continue them. His years among us had increased his appetite for mortal women and mortal luxuries, ergo he'd have preserved them. But there was no guarantee that whoever stepped up to the plate next would feel the same. In fact, There was little likelihood that the new Unseelie leader would feel anything even remotely human. If one of the Dark Princes took over, say, death or pestilence, they'd have no long-term goals, no restraint. They'd indulge until there was nothing left to devour. We'd actually been lucky to have an ex-Seelie leading the Unseelie. I knew what the Princes were made of. Emptiness, darker and vaster than the night sky. Their appetites were boundless, insatiable. I'd seen what had happened in the street between the Seelie and Unseelie when they'd faced off. The ground had begun to split. If the two courts clashed on a grand scale, if they went at each other en masse, they would destroy our world. While they could move on to a new planet, we couldn't. The human race would die out. I'd thought I had no pressing obligations, no express deadlines. But I did. The longer the book was loose and the Fae battled each other, the greater the danger of total human annihilation. I wondered if Barron's realized any of this. I wondered if he even cared. Whatever he was could probably survive any fallout, nuclear or Fae. Would he simply hook up with the other immortals on our planet and move on with them? I needed to know where he stood. "We've got serious problems, Barron's." He slammed the brakes so hard I got whiplash. If I hadn't had my seatbelt on, I'd have gone through the windshield. I'd been so lost in thought that I hadn't realized we'd arrived. "Mortal over here," I said irritably, rubbing my neck. "You might try remembering that..." "Ah! What the... Barron's!" I was yanked out of the car by my arm so hard it nearly popped out of socket. I hadn't even seen him get out and come around to my side. Then I was over the curb, up on the sidewalk, and flattened against the brick wall of a building. He leaned into me, trapping my legs with his, completing the cage with his arms. I braced my palms against his chest to hold him at bay. His ribcage rose and fell beneath my hands, pumping like bellows. He was rock hard against my thigh, much bigger than I'd ever felt him. Too big. I heard the sound of ripping fabric. I looked up at his face and did a double take. His skin was the color of mahogany, darkening by the second. He was taller than he should be, and sparks of crimson glittered in his eyes. When he snarled, I caught the flash of long black fangs in the moonlight. He was changing. His hair was getting longer, thicker, matting around his face. He dropped his head close and sharp fangs grazed my ear.
"Never use sex as a weapon against me again."
The words were guttural, misshapen by teeth too large for a human mouth, but I understood them perfectly. I shrugged.
"Don't give me a fucking shrug,"
he snarled. His cheek was against mine, and I could feel the planes of it sharpening, broadening. Again I heard cloth ripping. I was angry. I'd had every right to be.
"So am I. You don't see me playing head games."
"You manipulate me all the time."
"Am I ruthless? Yes. Do I keep my own counsel? Sure. Do I push you sometimes to get you to say something you want to say anyway? Certainly. But I never mind-fuck you."
"Look, Barron's, what do you want from me? It was..." I searched for the right word and didn't like what I found. "Immature, okay? But you aren't blameless. You were talking about killing me." The rattlesnake moved in his throat. "You owe me an apology, too," I snapped.
"For what?"
Something grazed my ear, tore the tender skin, and I felt a warm rush of blood. Then his tongue touched my skin. "For not telling me you couldn't die. Do you have any idea what watching you die did to me?"
Let's see. Yes, made you fuck Darok within hours."
"Jealous, Barron's? Sounds like it." There was no way I was explaining myself. He hadn't given me any explanations. Because he hadn't, I'd assumed all kinds of things and very nearly made a grand ass of myself in front of him last night. Air hissed between his fangs as he shoved away from the wall. I hadn't realized how cold the night was until the heat of his body was gone. He stood in the middle of the street with his back to me, hands fisted at his sides, long talons sliding through monstrous fingers, shuddering, snarling. I leaned against the wall, watching him. He was fighting for control over which form was going to achieve dominance, and although I was pissed off at both of them at the moment, I preferred the man. The beast was more emotional, if that word could be applied to Barons in any form. It made me feel confused, conflicted. I would never get the image of stabbing it out of my head. When I'd been provoking him, it hadn't occurred to me that this might be the outcome. Barons was always so controlled, disciplined. I'd thought his transformation into the beast had been a conscious one, that like everything else in the world, it happened if he willed it to or didn't happen at all. I remembered the first time I'd ever heard the strange rattle in his chest, the night he and I had gone after the book with the three stones and failed. He'd carried me back to the bookstore, and I'd wakened on the sofa to find him staring at the fire. I remembered thinking that Baron's skin might be a slipcover for a chair I never wanted to see. I'd been right. Beneath his human form was an utterly inhuman one. But why? How? What was he? Not once had he lost control like this around me. Was his ability to contain his animal nature getting weaker? Or was I more deeply rooted beneath that changeable skin? I smiled, but it held no mirth. I liked that thought. I wasn't sure who that made more screwed up, him or me. I stayed against the wall, and he stayed in the street with his back to me for a good 3 or 4 minutes. Slowly, with what looked like a great deal of pain, he changed back, shuddering, snarling all the while. I understood why I'd thought I killed him with my runes last night. The transformation from beast to man appeared to be intensely painful. When he finally turned around, there was no trace of crimson in his dark gaze, no stump of horns erupting from his skull. He grimaced as he stepped up on the curb, as if his limbs hurt, teeth flashing white and even in the moonlight. He was once again a powerfully built man of 30 or so, wearing a long coat that was ripped at the shoulders and split down the back.
You mind fuck me again, I'll fuck you back. But it won't be with my mind.
Don't threaten me. I was tempted to do it right then and there and see if he'd really follow through. I was furious at him. I wanted him. I was a mess where Barons was concerned.
I didn't. I warned you.
A sharp retort was on the tip of my tongue. He shamed it into silence with,
I expect better from you, Miss Lane.
Then he turned for the door and entered the building. I half expected there to be unseelie guards on the top floor, but either Darok had been too arrogant to bother leaving any, or since he'd been killed, his army saw no point in protecting his hideouts anymore. Once inside, Barons went straight for the bedroom suite Darok had occupied. I followed him, because it was the one place I'd not gotten the chance to search. I stood in the doorway, watching him ransack the opulently furnished room, pushing chairs and ottomans out of his way, overturning the dresser and kicking through the contents before he turned to the bed. He ripped the blankets and sheets from it, flung the mattress from the frame, pulled out a knife and gutted it, searching for anything hidden inside, then stopped and breathed deeply. After a moment, he cocked his head and inhaled again. I got it instantly. Barons has extremely heightened senses. Being in touch with your inner animal has its advantages. He knows my scent, and he couldn't smell me on Darok's bed. I knew the second he decided we'd probably done it on the kitchen table or in the shower or bent over the couch or on the balcony or maybe just had an orgy with all the rhino boys and guards watching. I rolled my eyes and left him to finish searching Darok's bedroom by himself. He could believe whatever he wanted to believe. I hoped he drowned in images of me having sex with Darok. He might not feel emotions about me, but he certainly had the territorial instincts of an animal. I hoped the idea of somebody else playing on his turf drove him nuts. I hurried to the suite I'd slept in, My runes were still throbbing crimson at the threshold and in the walls. They were larger, pulsating more brightly. I didn't linger. I'd searched the place thoroughly the other night. I grabbed my pack, hurried out into the living room, and began stuffing the photo albums of Alina into my pack. They were mine now, and when this was all over, I was going to sit down and lose myself in them for days, maybe weeks, and tell myself the happy part of her story. I heard Barons in the den, knocking over lamps and chairs and tossing things around. I walked in and watched books fly, papers explode into the air. He had his beast under control, but he wasn't bothering to try to control the man. He'd swapped his torn coat for one of Darok's. It was too small for him, but at least it covered the rest of his shredded clothes. What are you looking for?
Allegedly, he knew a shortcut, or I'd have killed him long ago.
Who told you about the shortcut? Was there anything Barons didn't know? He shot me a look.
I didn't need anyone to. Prima facie, Miss Lane. Facts speak. Didn't you wonder why he kept tracking it, even though he had none of the stones and would have been corrupted the moment he picked it up?
I shook my head, disgusted with myself. It had taken me months to get around to wondering that. What a great sleuth I was. You think he left notes?
I know he did. The limits of his mortal brain posed problems for him. He was accustomed to the memory capabilities of a fae.
So Barons knew there was a shortcut, too, and had been seeking it for some time. Why didn't you ever tell me?
They're called shortcuts for a reason. The shorter they are, the more they usually cut. Nothing is without price, Miss Lane.
Didn't I know it? I knelt and began scanning sheets of paper on the floor. Darok hadn't written in notebooks. He'd used thick, expensive vellum sheets and written on them in fancy calligraphy, as if he'd expected his work to one day be memorialized. Documents from Darok, liberator of the Fae, displayed like we showcase the Constitution in a museum somewhere. I looked back up at Barons. He was no longer throwing things. He was sorting through papers and notebooks. There was no trace of temperamental beast or angry man. He was icy, impervious Barons again. "Didn't anybody ever tell him about laptops?" I muttered.
"Fae can't use them. They fry them."
Maybe there was something to my energy theory. As more sheets rained down, I gathered them up and examined them. Under the watchful eyes of Darok's guards, I hadn't been able to snoop through his personal documents. It was fascinating stuff. This particular cache of notes was about the different Unseelie castes, their strengths, weaknesses, and unique tastes. It was jarring to realize he'd had to learn about the Unseelie, just like we had. I folded the pages and began stuffing them in my backpack. This was useful information. She-seers need to be passing it down one generation to the next. We could put together a set of Fae encyclopedias from his notes. When I ran out of room in my pack, I began stacking the pages up to return for them later. Then I saw a page that was different from the rest, filled with scribbled bits of thoughts, bulleted lists, circled comments, and arrows pointing from one note to another. Alina's name was on it, along with Rowena's and dozens of others. Scribbled next to their names were their special talents. There were lists of countries, addresses, and names of companies I assumed were the foreign branches of Post-Haste, Inc., the courier service that was our front. One bulleted list contained the 6 Irish bloodlines of our sect, plus another I'd never heard of, O'Callaghan. Was it possible there were more bloodlines than we knew about? What if another Fae got their hands on this information? They could wipe us all out! I continued scanning and gasped. Rowena had a touch of mental coercion. Cat had the gift of emotional telepathy. How the hell had Darok figured these things out? According to him, Joe was in the now secret haven. Danny's name was also on the page, heavily underlined and punctuated with a question mark. I wasn't on the list, which meant he'd written it before he'd become aware of me last fall. At the bottom of the page was a short bulleted list. She-seers. Sense Fae. Alina. Senses she-sedue. Fae hallows and relics. Abby. She Sadu. Unseelie King. She Sears. I blinked at it, trying to make sense of it. Was Darok saying that it hadn't been the Seelie Queen, as Nana O'Reilly had claimed, who delivered the Dark Book to the Abbey so long ago? Had the Unseelie King himself brought it to us, because we could sense Fae and Fae Hallows, and that made us the perfect guardians for it? Suddenly, Barons was behind me, looking over my shoulder.
Makes you think about yourself a little differently, doesn't it?
Not really. I mean, who cares who brought it to the Abbey? Point is, we're the guardians.
Is that what you get from his notes, Miss Lane?
He purred. I glanced up at him. What do you get from them? I said defensively. I didn't like his tone any more than I liked the amused glitter in his dark gaze.
It said the king was horrified when he realized that his act of atonement had resulted in the birth of his most powerful abomination yet. He chased it from one world to the next, for eons, determined to destroy it. When he finally caught up with it, their battle lasted centuries and reduced dozens of worlds to ruins. But it was too late. The Shisadu had become fully sentient, a dark force of its own. When the king first created the Shisadu, he was greater and the book was lesser. It was a repository for the king's evil, but without drive and intent. Yet, while it roamed, it evolved, until it became all the king was and more. The creation, abandoned by its creator, learned to hate. The Shisadu began to pursue the king.
He paused and gave me one of his wolf smiles.
So, what else might the Dark King have created? Perhaps an entire caste that could track his greatest enemy, contain it, and keep it from destroying him. Are you going to tell me you never once considered that?
I stared. We were the good guys, human to the core.
She-seers, watchdogs for the UK.
He mocked. I was chilled by his words. It had been bad enough to discover I was adopted, and the parents who'd raised me weren't my biological parents. Now what was he implying? That I'd had no parents? That's the biggest pile of BS I've ever heard. First, Darok had suggested I was a stone. Now Barons was proposing that the She-Seers were a secret caste of Unseelie.
If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck...
I am not a duck!
Why does it offend you so much? Power is power.
The Unseelie King didn't make me.
The idea frightens you. Fear is more than a wasted emotion. It's the penultimate set of blinders. If you can't face the truth of your reality, you can't be a part of it, can't control it. You may as well throw in the towel and yield to the whims of anyone with a stronger will. Do you like being helpless? Is that what you get off on? Is that why, the moment I was gone, you turned to the bastard that had you raped?
So what are you and your men? I countered coldly. Another of the Unseelie King's secret castes? Is that what you are, Barons? Is that why you know so much about them?
None of your fucking business.
He turned away and resumed his search. I was trembling, and there was a sour taste in my mouth. I pushed the papers away, got up and walked to the balcony where I stood staring out at the night. Barons had shaken me deeply with his suggestion that the She-Seers were a caste of Unseelie. I had to admit that Darok's notes could certainly be construed that way. And just the other night, I'd stood between two Fae armies, thinking how glad I was to be like the Unseelie, strengthened by pain, less frivolous and breakable. Then there was that dark, glassy lake in my head that had so many inexplicable gifts to offer, like runes that an ex-Fae had recognized, that had given him pause, runes that the Unseelie princes had disliked intensely. I shivered. I had a new question to be obsessed with, besides what was Jericho Barons. What was I? When we left, I snatched a Danny Daly from the lamppost outside the building, slid into the passenger seat of the Viper and began to read it. Her birthday was coming up. I smiled faintly. Figured she'd tell the whole world. She'd make it a national holiday if she could. I wasn't surprised to learn she'd been in the street last night and had seen the hunter kill Darok. Danny didn't take orders from anyone, not even me. Had she been there to try to kill Darok herself? I wouldn't put it past her. As I fastened my seatbelt, I wondered whether she hadn't stuck around long enough to see that the hunter had been possessed by the Shisadu, or if she'd decided to omit that bit of news. If she had stuck around, what did she make of the beast that blasted into me and carried me off? Probably figured it was some other kind of Unseelie she hadn't seen before. Although I was shocked to realize so much time had passed while I was in the Silvers, and it was the middle of February, I should have known today was Valentine's Day. I glanced sourly over at Barron's. I'd never had a happy one. They'd been various shades of sucky since kindergarten, when Chip Johnson ate too many iced cookies and threw up all over my new dress. I'd been drinking fruit punch, and when his puke hit me, I had an involuntary sympathetic response and spewed punch everywhere. It had set off a chain reaction of 5-year-olds vomiting that I still couldn't think about without getting queasy. Even back in 2nd and 3rd grade, Valentine's Day had been a stressful experience for me. I'd wake up dreading school. Mom always got Alina and me cards for everyone in our class, but a lot of moms weren't as sensitive. I'd sit at my desk and hold my breath, praying someone besides Tubby Thompson or Blinky Brewer would remember me. Then in middle school, we had the Sadie Hawkins dance, where the girls had to ask the guys to go, putting on even more pressure. Adding insult to injury on what was supposed to be the most romantic day of the year, I was forced to risk rejection by asking out the guy of my dreams and praying that, by the time I got my nerve up, there'd be someone left besides Tubby and Blinky. In 8th grade, I waited too long and nobody popular was left, so I'd blow-dried my forehead on the high heat setting, spritzed my sheets with water, and faked the flu that morning. Mom made me go anyway. The scorch mark on my forehead gave me away. I'd hastily cut bangs to try to cover it and had ended up at the dance dateless, miserable with a painful burn and a bad haircut. High school brought along a whole new set of problems. I shook my head, in no mood to relive teenage horrors. Bright side was, this Valentine's Day could have been a whole lot worse. At least I'd get to sleep tonight with the comforting knowledge that Barron's was alive. "Where to now?" I asked. He stared straight ahead. The rattlesnake moved in his chest. We pulled up at 939 Rivemont Street, in front of the demolished entrance to Chester's, the club that had once been Dublin's #1 hotspot for the jaded, rich, and beautiful bored, until it was destroyed on Halloween. I stared at him disbelievingly. He parked and turned off the engine. "I'm not going in Chester's. They want me dead in there."
"And if they smell fear on you, they'll try to kill you."
He opened the door and got out. "Your point?"
"If I were you, I'd try to smell like something else."
"Why do I have to go in?" I groused. "Can't you visit your buddies by yourself?"
"Do you want to see your parents or not?"
I leapt out, slammed the door, and ran after him, skirting rubble. I had no idea why he was offering. Certainly not because he was trying to be nice, but I wasn't about to miss the opportunity. As unpredictable as my life was, I wasn't going to miss a single chance to spend time with the people I loved. As if he'd read my thoughts, he tossed over his shoulder.
"I said see them, not visit with them."
I hated the thought of my parents being held in the belly of the seedy, unseelie hangout, but I had to concede that underground, in the middle of Barron's men, was probably the safest place for them. They couldn't go back to Ashford. The Unseelie princes knew where we lived. The only other possibilities were the Abbey, the bookstore, or with Villain. Not only were there shades in the Abbey still, the Shisadu had paid a deadly visit, and I didn't trust Rowena with a butter knife. I certainly didn't want them hanging around me, seeing what a mess I'd become. And Villain, with his dim understanding of humans, might decide to tuck them away on a beach with an illusion of Alina, which my dad could handle, but it would definitely push my mom over the edge. We might never get her out of there. Chester's it was. The club had once been the most popular place in the city, accessible by invitation only, with marble pillars that framed an ornate entrance into the 3-story club, but lavish French-style gas lamps had been ripped from the concrete and used as battering rams against the facade. Fallen roof supports had crushed a world-renowned hand-carved bar and shattered elegant stained-glass windows. The club sign dangled in pieces above the entrance. Chunks of concrete blocked the door, and the building was heavily covered with graffiti. The new entrance to the club was around back, secreted beneath an inconspicuous, battered metal door in the ground, close to the crumbling foundation. If you didn't know about the club, you wouldn't give a second thought to what appeared to be a forgotten cellar door. The dance floors were so far underground, and so well soundproofed, that unless you had Danny's super hearing, you'd never know there was a party going on. "I can't be part of an unseelie cast," I told him as he opened the door. "I can touch the Seelie spear."
"Some say the unseelie king created the she-seers with his imperfect song. Others say he had sex with human women to found the bloodlines. Perhaps your blood is diluted enough that it poses no such problem."
Typical barons. He had an answer for all the things I didn't want to know, but none for the things I did. After descending a ladder, pushing open another door and going down a second ladder, we arrived at the real entrance to the club, an industrial foyer with tall double doors. Since I'd last been here, someone had hired a decorator and replaced the tall wood doors with new ones that were black and glossy, the height of urban chic, so highly polished that I could see the couple who'd followed us down reflected in them. She was dressed like me in a long, slim skirt, high-heeled boots, and a fur-trimmed coat. He stood near, his body angled in on her, like a walking shield. I jerked. No couple had followed us down. I hadn't recognized myself. It wasn't that my hair was blonde again. The black doors reflected only shape and movement, not color. It was that I looked like someone else. I stood differently. Gone was the last vestige of baby softness I'd brought with me to Dublin last August. I wondered what Mom and Dad would think of me. I hoped they could see past the changes to the Mac I still was somewhere beneath it all. I was excited and nervous to see them. He pushed the doors open.
"Stay close."
The club hit me like a blast of overblown sensuality, cool in chrome and glass, black and white, the height of industrial muscle dressed in Manhattan posh. The decor promised uninhibited eroticism, pleasure for pleasure's sake, sex worth dying for. The enormous interior was terraced with dance floors, each served by their own bars on a dozen different sublevels. The mini-clubs within the club had their own themes, some elegant on polished floors, others heavy on tattoos and urban decay. The bartenders and servers reflected the theme of their sub-club, some in topless tuxes, others in leather and chains. On one terrace, the extremely young servers were dressed like uniformed schoolchildren. On another, I turned sharply away, not looking, not thinking about that one. I hoped Barron's was keeping my parents somewhere far from all this debauchery. Although I'd mentally prepared myself to see humans and unseelie mingling, flirting and pairing off, I'm never ready for it. Chester's is anathema to everything I am. Fae and human were not meant to mix. The Fae are immortal predators, with no regard for human life, and those humans foolish enough to think for one moment that their tiny, inconsequential lives matter to the Fae? Well, Riordan says those humans deserve to die. And when I see them in a place like Chester's, I have to agree. You can't save people from themselves. You can only try to wake them up. The static of so many unseelie crowded into one place was deafening. Grimacing, I turned off my she-seer volume. Music spilled from one level to the next, overlapping. Sinatra dueled with Manson. Zombie flipped off Pavarotti. The message was clear. If you want it, we've got it, and if we don't, we'll create it for you. Still, there was one theme the whole place shared. Chester's had been decorated for Valentine's Day. "Ugh, this is just wrong," I muttered. Thousands of pink and red balloons dangling silken cords drifted through the club, emblazoned with messages that ranged from sweet to cheeky to horrifying. At the entrance to every mini-club was a huge golden statue of Cupid, holding a bow that sported dozens of long golden arrows. The human contingent of Chester's clientele was chasing the balloons from one level to the next, climbing stairs, perching on stools, yanking them lower and popping them with their arrows, which I didn't get at all until I watched a folded bit of paper explode from one, and then a dozen women piled up in a heap of fighting, clawing wildcats, determined to get whatever the prize was. When one woman finally broke free from the mess, clutching her treasure, three others ganged up on her, stabbed her with their arrows, and took it away. Then they turned on one another with shocking brutality. A man rushed in, snatched the wad of paper, and ran. I looked around for Barons, but we'd gotten separated in the crowd. I shoved dangling silk cords from my face. "Don't you want one?" a redhead chirped, as she snatched the cord of one I'd just pushed away. "What's in them?" I said warily.
"Invitations, silly, if you're lucky. But there aren't many. If you get one, they'll let you into the private rooms to dine upon the sanctified flesh of the immortal Fae for the whole night," she twittered rapturously. "Others have gifts."
"Like what?" She stabbed at the balloon with a delicate golden arrow, and the balloon popped, raining green goo mixed with tiny bits of writhing flesh.
"Jackpot!"
people screamed. I scrambled out of the way just in time to avoid